Put your marker in Mark chapter 9. Let's spend most of our day in this chapter. I don't think we're going to be flipping very much at all. Mark chapter 9. Read one quick announcement that I got very late. That didn't get time to get to Julian, but Gloria and Doyle Sadler's great-granddaughter, Cheyenne Camper, 1 year old, is sick with pneumonia and mono. So they're really worried about her. Let's remember Shiloh and that family. And speaking of that, kind of leads right into our study. Imagine a sick child. And now imagine a parent who exhausts every possible avenue to help that child, which is what all parents here would do. Nothing is successful. Nothing helps. Chasing doctors, chasing this, chasing that, but nothing works out. And it's to the point where all the parent can do is just sit and watch and look and hurt with them. Now imagine that happens during the first century when the time of demonic possessions were real. And now imagine this powerful demon in your child, and now there's not just this sickness, but there is violence that's being done to your child. Throwing themselves on fire, throwing themselves into bodies of water with the intention of drowning, throwing themselves on the ground and all the scars and that the rocks or pebbles would have made as they hit with full blast and full weight. Can you imagine the scars? We may not have somebody in our close family who's been burned, but we've seen pictures. We know the scar that things like that do. Now imagine the emotional scars that would be with a family like this. Add to all of that a loss of ability to communicate. A child that, because of this demon, is mute. And remember, this would have been before what we call sign language would have been invented. Very unlikely that this child would have been educated. So they couldn't have been writing notes back and forth. You see, even if one of us couldn't talk, we could communicate. We could write to each other. We could learn the language of the hands. Not then. To be mute back then was almost to be out of communication with anyone, other than some very basic, maybe some finger pointing. There'd be some very rudimentary things we might could have communicated, but not much. And I've been telling you to imagine all this. Have you got to Mark chapter 9 yet? Because if you have, stop imagining. Because it's a real event. There is a parent with a child in this very situation. And there is so much to be learned about. There's a phrase within this text that I've always appreciated. And then you just realize one of these days, that as much as you appreciate maybe that one verse, never really dug into the whole text itself. And that's where I was. And a shameful admission. You look back, you see, I remember that event. Okay, I know about that event, but never really studied it. There's a difference in reading something and studying something. You know that. And so I want us to study about this situation today because there's so much to learn. To give the timeline of Mark chapter 9, look in verse 2 with me. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John and led them to a high mountain by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. We are familiar with the Mount Transfiguration. That's where we are when this event took place. Jesus is on the mountain. Peter, James, and John are with him. And that incredible event is taking place. But that's not where we are in our study. What we're going to talk about happened at the bottom of the mountain. While Jesus was at the top with those three disciples, you have this father with this child that we've been describing. At his rope's end, nothing has availed. He's gone after this cure and this help and his hope kind of fading with the wind. He has heard about a man named Jesus who by this point has done incredible, miraculous things. And as me and you would do, okay, I'll go. I've heard good things. Nothing else has done me any good. So he goes looking for Jesus. He gets there. Jesus is not home. Jesus is not here. Jesus is somewhere up there. But what he finds out is Jesus is not there, but his disciples are. Now let's pause and go back a little bit. Go back to chapter 3. Let's talk about those disciples for just a minute. There would have been 9 of them, because remember, Peter, James, and John is off the top of the mountain with Jesus. But there are 9 of them at the bottom of the mountain, and it's not just your typical 9. Look in Mark chapter 3, in verse 14. He ordained 12 that they might be with him, that he might send them to preach and to have authority to heal sicknesses and to cast out demons. Look in chapter 6. So in chapter 3, some authority and power was given. Okay? What happens then? In Mark chapter 6, verse 7. Mark 6, verse 7. He called unto him the 12 and began to send them out 2 by 2. And he gave them power over unclean spirits. Look down to verse 13. And while they were gone on what we call this missionary journey, this limited commission, look down to verse 13. They cast out many demons and anointed with oil many that were sick and healed them. So when you go back to John chapter 9, this is a happy day, right? You've got your son. Everything else has failed. Now you've heard about this man Jesus, so you go after him. He's not there, but there are 9 men there who are. And they have power over demons. And they have used it successfully. Are you feeling a little bit better? And what happens is, we don't have the whole details of this. We just know the end of it. What happens is, hope is lost again. Because it didn't happen that day. He brings the son. He came thinking Jesus can help. Instead, he's got these other 9 men who have also been successful. And he puts the son before him and they fail. All of them. None of the 9 able to do anything more than all the rest who have attempted to help his son. So now put yourself in that father's head. How do you feel? Here's your scarred son, taken over by this incredibly powerful being. Nothing's helped. And even when you get word that others can, they can't help him. And how are you feeling? Luke chapter 9. I'm going to turn there. I just want to remind you. We have these other Gospels that tell us a little bit more detail. I think it's interesting that in Luke chapter 9, there's a word used there that is not used in Mark's account. In Luke chapter 9, it says that when he came there, that he begged them to help his son. This man is at the end. He's at the end of the rope. He gets there, and here are these 9 men that have in times past been successful, and it says he pleaded with them for help. But it didn't do any good. Now that all sets the stage. That's all time frame. The event begins in verse 14. When he came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude around them and the scribes questioning with them. So we've looked at all the time frame and the background. Now we get to the event itself. And Jesus has come back down the mountain. The transfiguration is over. The separation of him and Peter, James, and John, it's over. They are now back down with the rest. And this is the commotion that Jesus shows up to. This is the scene he shows up to. He gets down off the mountain, and as soon as he gets there, there's this mass of humanity with raised voices. You look in verse 14, it says there was a great multitude around them. That's talking about the 9. The ones who failed. And the scribes, the old King James says questioning with them. But when you do a word study about that word questioning, it's a lot more than, this is not just them just shooting the breeze. That word in other places will be translated arguing. There is a commotion going on. There is a controversy going on. And Jesus' nine are at the center of it. So he shows up to this. Verse 15. Straightway all the people, when they beheld him, they were greatly amazed. They ran to him and saluted him. And he said to them, what questioning are you doing? What is this about? Why are you talking to them? Why is this argumentation happening? What is the questions about? What is going on is how we would say it. What's going on? And it's really interesting who answers him. You would think one of the nine would speak up, don't you? Does that not seem logical? They're the ones who were the center of this. They were the ones that everyone's gathered around. That's who the questioning and the arguing was pointed at. And Jesus comes out, what is going on? Don't you think maybe Bartholomew might speak up? Isn't it time for Matthew to speak up? None of them speak. It's kind of interesting. Now they have become mute. I don't know if it's embarrassment. I'm not sure. But they don't speak in this time. The Father speaks. It's the Father who steps up and says, I can tell you what's going on. So let's let him tell us about his son. Look in verse 16. What do you question? What's going on? What's the questions about? And one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought to you my son, who has a spirit that's caused him to be dumb. It's mute. Wherever it takes him, when it takes him over, he tears him. He foams at the mouth, gnashes with his teeth, becomes rigid, is the idea there. It sounds a lot like what we would classify maybe as a seizure. He's grinding his teeth, foaming at the mouth. He's gone hard on the ground. I spoke to your disciples that they would cast him out. And remember, Luke's version said he pleaded with them. I'm begging them. They could not. Drop down to verse 22. We get a little bit more information about it. Oftentimes, it cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. So not only does it put him in these seizure type situations, there are times he's just absolutely destructive. It goes beyond sicknesses. It's destruction. He will throw himself on top of a burning pit. He will throw himself. Here's the initiation of waterboarding without trying to make a joke out of it. He throws himself into water with the intentions of drowning himself. And again, here's a father. How would you like to explain that about your son? How would you like to tell about your child? And this is how you describe your life. And he's the lone one who answered Jesus' question. What's going on? I can tell you what's going on. And it's been going on a long time. And he tells him. In verse 20, they brought him to him. Now that can be confusing, him and him. They bring him, the boy, to him, Jesus. And when he saw him, the spirit tore him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed foaming. Now, I want you to think for just a second. We're trying to do this from the dad's perspective. I want you to get in his head. You've heard about Jesus, so you come. He's not there, but nine others are. They've had some success with this, but it doesn't work. And now here's Jesus. Here's the one you initially came for anyway. And you bring your son to him. And the first thing that happens is another episode. You finally have gotten him into the one that you have heard can certainly do something about it. And it doesn't look like it's going to be any different. Because as soon as Jesus sees him, as soon as he is brought before the one who's supposed to fix all of this, it happens all over again. So again, how much hope do you have? How much excitement do you have about this being any day different than last month when you tried, and 6 days ago when you went to this other guy? And what seems to be different? Nothing seems to be different. Different place, different so-called helper, but it's the same thing, is what it's looking like. Confidence eroding. Drop down to verse 21. He asked the Father, how long ago since this came on to him? And he said, since a child. This was not something that happened last month. This has been going on and on and on. It's been going on since he was a child. Oftentimes it cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. We're trying to figure this out from the dad's perspective, right? Can you see how this conversation took place? What's going on? Well, what's going on is my son. I need help. He needs help. This is what's been happening. This is how long it's been happening. Nobody else has been able to help, including your own men. If you can do something, will you? Can you see how that just falls off the tongue? If you have compassion, please do. Verse 23, Jesus answered him, and this would have probably been emphasized, if. What do you mean, if? Did we even catch that in verse 22? I brought him here, it didn't work, I've done this, it didn't work, I've done this, it didn't work. If you can do something, how about you taking a shot at it? If you can do something, will you please do that? Well, Jesus doesn't let that fly. What you got is the Father, and he recognizes that Jesus has a desire to help. But you know, there's been a lot of people with a desire to help. There's a lot of people who hasn't run from the Son. They just haven't been able to help the Son. So he recognizes Jesus may have a desire, but like everybody else, has he got the ability? Because nobody else has. So there's this doubt a little bit that comes out in this conversation. At best, all we can call this is a guarded hope. He may have a little bit more hope now that Jesus is off the mountain, but it doesn't seem to be a ringing endorsement, huh? And so Jesus just starts right there. And basically the answer is, I can do my part. I'm wondering about your part. If you can, and there seems to be an exclamation point there, what do you mean, if I can? All things are possible to him that believes. So he has, in the blink of an eye, shifted the focus. Because it was on Jesus. Can you do something? If you can, do you think you can? It's not about me. This is going to be about you. All things are possible if you believe. What do you mean, if I can? I can do my part. I'm wondering if you're ready to receive it. Are you ready? And immediately it's right there back in his lap. And for just a real quick application for ourselves. Have you ever been in a somewhat hopeless situation? Obviously not to this extent, but you feel like something's a hopeless situation. And we go into it with this idea of, well, here goes nothing. When me and you go into something with here goes nothing, nothing's about to come out of it. And that's what we've got here. You've got this man with hope, this hopelessness, and that spirit of hopelessness has kind of just taken over him, and it just makes the whole situation just kind of get bigger. And so Jesus asked the question, do you believe? All things are possible to those that believe. And so he has put it into his lap. And here's the verse. I mentioned that the verse that I always appreciate about this text without ever thinking much about it, to my shame. I love the answer. What do you mean, if I can? All things are possible to him that believed. And straightway, verse 24, blink of an eye, straightway the father of the child cried out with tears and said, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. Do you think you can do something? If you can do something? What do you mean, if I can do something? If you believe, it's possible. Lord, I do believe. Help my unbelief. What a statement. Here's a father. Just to think about him again from his viewpoint. Does the father know what he wants? Yes, he does. Wants his son healed, and he's been wanting that for a long time. He knows what he wants. How badly does he want it? He would have given up anything. You know how he would feel. He knows what he wants, and he wants it badly, and he is willing to exchange all this doubt and hopelessness for some certainty. He's willing to make that change, while at the same time willing to admit, I need help to get there. Do you not appreciate a man like that? We studied minor prophets in the high school class downstairs. Today we studied Obadiah. The pride of your heart has deceived you. Talking to Edom. Because of the place they held in a mountain lofty site, they didn't think anybody could hurt them. Because of alliances they had made, they didn't think anybody could hurt them. Because of the wisdom and advantages that they had over others, they didn't think anybody could hurt them. And he says, the pride of your heart deceives you. I will bring you down. I'm going to humble you, God said. And now you've got the opposite of that. In a world full of pride, and let's be honest, we can be guilty of it too. When pride just reigns, you've got a man who's saying, I need help. He's aware of his imperfections. He's not trying to hide his weaknesses. Don't you know, maybe even some of us, what do you mean, if I can? All things are possible to those that, oh Lord, I believe. Don't worry about my belief. I got a really strong faith. Oh, nobody can shake my faith. Yeah, how'd that work out for Peter? Sometimes we think we're stronger than we are. Sometimes we think we can handle things that we can't handle. And here's a man who doesn't play that game. I believe, but I need to believe more, and I need your help to do it. Help my unbelief. That ought to be the prayer of every one of us in this room. This room's full of people that believe. But we're going to be tempted before this day goes down. Before the sun disappears, we're going to be tempted. We're going to need some help that's stronger than us. All of this room, we're full of people that believe. Tomorrow there's going to be something tempt us, and it's going to be strong, and it's going to be powerful, and we need stronger help than what we could just do with our own might. And here's a man who recognizes that. Do I recognize it? Do you recognize it? He's not pretending to be something that he's not. Hypocrisy is not weakness. Hypocrisy is pretending. And this is a man that's not pretending. Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. Help me with my doubt. Help me with this struggle that I've got of thinking this will be different. This man has a weakened faith, and we now know what his faith is weakened by. He's got a weakened faith because he has been sorely disappointed, and it's apparently been going on for years. His faith has been hit and hit hard because there's been a lot of trials placed in his life with family. You want to have your faith attacked? Let there be a problem going on inside the household. That's a quick way to have our knees taken out from under us. And that's what's happening here. So he has a weakened faith, but don't make the mistake of thinking it's not a genuine faith. And he says, I want help. I want to be better. And aren't you thankful how Jesus responds? Because there's a lot of earthly people. I wonder if we would be one of them. That in a certain business situation or a certain whatever, if you can do it. What do you mean, if I can do it? Hey, why don't you just go somewhere else? If you don't think I can do it, get out of here. Don't let the door hit you on the back. We know people who would respond that way. Jesus doesn't run him off. Jesus doesn't storm off himself either. In verse 25, Lord, I believe. Help me. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit and said, you dumb and deaf spirit, I charge you to come out of him and enter no more into him. I'd never paid attention to that. You learn this in the big setting, and what comes into our mind and what we put to memory is he pulled the demon out of this child. But it was more than that. He pulled him out and he said, you're not ever going back again. You stay away from him. The spirit cried and rent him and came out of him. And he was as one dead, insomuch that many said, he is dead. Get out of him. And you're not ever going back in again. And he, as the demon leaves, The rending happens again. He's on the ground and the demon is gone. And then he's just there. The rigidness gone. The foaming gone. The gnashing of the teeth done. Now he's just laying there. And for all the world, it looked like he was laying there dead. And that's what people think. Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up, and he arose. Here's Jesus, who doesn't storm off because of this man's struggles. As a matter of fact, he gives him exactly what he asked for. He gives him exactly what he came to him for. Remember that in a minute. He responds with this imperfect confidence with perfect power. He responds to an imperfect hope with some amazing grace, as we've seen. And he grants the very thing that the dad hoped for. And just as a quick aside, what this does in the big picture, it just emphasizes all the more how much powerful Jesus was, even compared to the apostles. Because remember that the nine had a reputation there. People had heard about what they had done, but they failed that day. And now Jesus shows up and he does what they could not do. What should that have done? And we know how hard-hearted some of these people were about Jesus, but what should it have done? It just showed how much more clearer that his power was even over theirs. So here's this incredible scene happening at this mountainside. And then some time passes. Not sure if that, minutes, hours, we're not sure. But some time passes. And in verse 28, it says, when he came into the house, the disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast him out? Isn't that a logical question? Don't you think that would have been on their minds immediately? Maybe even before Jesus came down, maybe that's what some of the arguing was about. Maybe that's what some of the question was about. Maybe they were questioning even among themselves, what is going on? We did it here. We couldn't do it here. What's happening? And so they asked Jesus privately, what happened? We've done this in the past. If we failed today. In verse 29, he said unto them, this kind can come forth by nothing but by prayer. Now mark your spot and go back to Matthew 17. There, I just want to connect the end of that thought there in Mark chapter 9. But there's a little bit more detail of that conversation in Matthew 17. So let's go to his account. And we'll pick up exactly where we were. But we get more of Jesus' answer. Matthew 17. Back up into verse 18, just so you'll see we're in the very same heartbeat. We're in the very same blink of an eye. Matthew 17, 18. Jesus rebuked the demon. He departed out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. And then the disciples came to Jesus separately, apart. Again, this would have been private. And they said, why can we not cast him out? And Jesus said, because of your unbelief. Because of your little faith. Well, that... Think how that fits into this situation. What Jesus has just done, he's just shed light that the Father was not the only one that day at the bottom of the mountain having a problem with faith. Jesus' disciples was having trouble with it that day too. Aren't some days you a little stronger than others? Don't some days temptations come and you fight them like a champion? And some days you melt like butter on asphalt. And to say that we were overcome is not even really being honest, because we didn't hardly fight. We didn't have to be overcome. We just gave in. Some days we're all stronger than others. And what we're finding out is this was not one of those strong days. Because of your little faith. Verily I say unto you, if you have faith of a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move to a yonder place, and it will remove. Nothing is impossible to you. However, this kind, and this is what was mentioned back in Mark's account, this kind, speaking of demon, whatever it was that made it different, this kind goes out by nothing but by prayer. me and you have stronger days, and sometimes we have weaker days. Well, the disciples find themselves in that situation. And with the very same understanding, sometimes temptations are stronger than others. There are some temptations that would be nothing to you. To me, it's a battle. And the vice versa is, there are some things I'm struggling with, and I'm struggling with them every day. You overcame it years ago, decades ago maybe. Temptations affect us differently, and some are stronger than others. Apparently, demons were just like that. We don't live in that time. They had a purpose. That purpose is gone. And so we just have to kind of put as many pieces of the puzzle together as we can. But apparently, there were different types. Or else what Jesus said doesn't make any sense. This type, this kind, there were different ones. Evidently, there were even demons of different powers, different abilities. And on the limited commission, they're dealing with some, and they dealt with them like the champion. And now they show up at the bottom of that mountain. And here's one maybe a little stronger, maybe a little tougher, whatever phrase you want to use. And what happened then didn't happen in the blink of an eye. And it seems they didn't know how to handle that. And what Jesus is saying is, you'd stopped praying. You gave up. You gave it the old college try. It didn't work. The demon stayed in control. And instead of fighting, and instead of going back at it, instead of going shoulder to shoulder with it, you just cowered down. You backed out. You quit fighting. You quit praying. You quit asking for help. And you lost. Now, does that sound like our life all too often? Remove the demon part of it, but here's a trial. And sometimes we go through it really well. There are other trials that's a little harder, a little tougher. Takes more fight, takes more effort, takes more sacrifice. And some days we don't do it very well. Now, think back to those days when we didn't fight very hard. Think back to those days when we kind of cowered down real quick. What was our prayer life in that moment? In those moments when our faith is weak. In those moments when we're not fighting the enemy very well at all. How's your prayer life then? How's my prayer life then? You see, he's admonishing them. And me and you better be taking it to heart. Because it's in those times when the trials are the toughest. It's in those times when the temptations are the toughest. That's when we better not be slacking our prayer life. And what he's telling them is, when you should have been praying and asking for help from above, that's, you weren't. Some are bigger than others. And they had been given some assurances back in Mark chapter 3, but they didn't take it to heart very well. They'd had some success, but success today doesn't mean success tomorrow. Me and you may fight temptation very well today. But we better stay humble, because tomorrow there's going to be a brand new one. And we got to fight that one too. And so here they are, after all their success, they find themselves in a bind, they find themselves in a tough, tight squeeze, and pray is not what they're doing. And a renewed effort is not what they're doing. They just quit. And that seems to be what Jesus is saying, your lack of faith. The Father had a problem with belief. You were no different. So again, he puts the focus on them. It wasn't on the demon. It wasn't on the daddy. It wasn't on the son. Why did we fail this time? It was because of you. When you go back to Mark 9, it's a stretch of an application, but let's make it. You know what you've got at the end of Mark chapter 9 when this story is completed, when this event is done? What you've got is a resurrected son. That's exactly what you've got. You know what you've got at the end of number 9, at Mark chapter 9? You've got a new life. That's exactly what you've got. You've got a restored life. I'm not trying to compare this resurrected son to God's resurrected son. I'm not trying to compare this resurrected life to the resurrected life that comes up out of the waters of baptism. But surely we can do something with that, right? When the Lord got finished with this boy, this man, this child that had been hurt so long, when He got through with him, he was new. And he was fresh. No longer diseased. No longer wailing. No more hurting. No more. No more. He did everything that the Father asked him to do. Made him whole. Get your songbooks out. Do you understand that Jesus can do everything with us that the Father has asked Him to? Father sent Him here to make us whole, to make us undiseased. And you understand that, making an application of, to make us unfilthed, unsinned, unspotted. And just like He made this man clean and whole and pure, He can do that in a spiritual sense with us. There can be a resurrected life today. There can be a fresh start on life today with all the disease and all the hurt and the harm and all those applications we can make about all that gone. We can go home as whole spiritually as that boy did physically. And if we don't take advantage of that, we would be foolish. The Father chased Jesus down so His Son could be made whole. How silly would it be for me and you to just hold on to the pew and go home as diseased as when we walked in? We're smarter than that. Take advantage of it while we stand and sing.